Depends, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, a lot of unfortunate situations occurring over the past 24 hours, and of course we'll address this. We'll talk about what the Dallas situation appears to have created, I think, a deepening degree of complexity, and certainly, God rest the souls of the five police officers brutally murdered sniper style in this situation in Dallas. We'll get into that. We'll talk about that. We'll end the show on a high note because we do have Todd Warner with us, a Catholic thinker. Always great to talk to him, and we'll be looking at one of his recent blog posts on why we sometimes don't feel at home even when we are at home. So look forward to talking to him. And apparently Donald Trump is saying that even if he does win the presidency, he may not serve. So another interesting wrinkle on the whole interesting world of Trumpism. All of that and more. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll find the stuff that we talk about on the show over there. Generally, everything we discuss, and then things we don't get to discuss here on the show on Facebook that we discuss a lot over there. There's a lot of conversation happening at any given time, and I certainly appreciate that. The disturbing news, of course, out of Dallas. We've all heard the reports. We know now, apparently, a little bit more than we did last night with the fact that this was a peaceful protest, a rally that was taking place regarding the recent shootings of black men, in this case, armed black men, but nonetheless, those who kind of seem to be detained or at some controlled environment, still fired upon and killed by police officers. Then, in the midst of this crowd, sniper fire from rooftops, around corners, hidden gunmen sniping 11 of the police officers, five of them fatally. Chief of Police out of Dallas, David Brown, with press conferences and certainly asking for support of the police department and the fact that generally their job is very difficult, undoubtedly. We know that. I think we've got a situation here that has a dynamic of challenges on both sides of this. There's an unfortunate disproportion, and I've posted this on my Facebook page, of those who say, well, if you look at the white people who have been shot by police officers compared to blacks who have been shot by police officers, there's more white than black. Well, yeah, certainly. But there's more white people than black people in the U.S. The African-American community comprises 12.3%. If you look at those who have been shot by police officers, it represents 50%. So there's undoubtedly a disproportion. That does not justify anything of the nature that we saw in Dallas yesterday, nor does it justify any sort of retaliation against police officers. What it does say is we have to find a way to deal with these situations much more appropriately. We've got to find a way to say, undoubtedly two wrongs don't make a right, but can we find a way to bring the the level of equality, the level of dignity for all to the same playing fields. That's where we are as Catholics. That's, at least it should be where we are as Catholics, let's put it that way. Because if we hold paramount the dignity of each individual, we will find solutions to this, because we're starting with the right set of parameters that says dignity first, dignity for all, dignity for the police officer, dignity for the individual who may be a suspect, who could find themselves in a very challenged situation and fired upon. So what we have to do is go back to that measuring rod, or begin to use that measuring rod. Yeah, I posted this on my Facebook page, got a lot of response off of this, simply saying, you know, as pro-lifers, it's been far too long that we have simply been anti-abortion. Now, if we're Catholic, God willing, we're pro-life. But that doesn't mean we're just anti-abortion. Yes, we are. We are anti-abortion. Yes. In every circumstance, every situation, there is nothing that's justified in killing an unborn child. Nothing. While at the same time, there's nothing that's justified in killing an individual, even if they are armed, who is not posing a threat to others. There's nothing justified in sniper fire on police officers that end up wounding several and killing several. Nothing of this nature is justified, not in the light of human dignity. So we some way, somehow, have got to set that as our touchstone, as our measuring rod, as the one point through which everything else is focused and filtered. If we do that, if we're capable of doing that, and I think it starts with us as people of faith, and I think if we do this effectively, we might have the opportunity to turn the tide. And well, let me put it this way. I wholeheartedly believe that if we did that, if we could get that as people of faith, not just be anti-abortion pro-lifers, but truly be dignity-first individuals, which include the unborn and include the vulnerable in any way, shape, or form, wherever they may be, and even the powerful, the vulnerable to the powerful, and we treat each individual with equal human dignity, now we have an opportunity to move the needle. Now we have set a standard for others to follow. That could happen. But we've got to understand what our faith demands, why our faith demands it, why the emphasis, why the importance, what this is about. I've talked at length about the document from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops on faithful citizenship, forming consciences for faithful citizenship, and this is it, right? This is where it comes down. Human dignity, common good, subsidiarity, and solidarity. If we get those four pillars, we get a heck of a strong foundation. We can build upon the rest of the culture, the rest of society. With those four components, you got it. We got it figured out. I said this, I posted this before the news of Dallas broke last night, but I still stand behind it. There's nothing that I would say changes today because of this unfortunate situation happening, and that is the co-opting of the Black Lives Matter slogan. And I've seen this in pro-life circles, and it's disturbing to me because it's basically saying, okay, you've tried to create your point, right? You've tried to state your case. You've tried to set this up as something that we need to pay attention to, and you know what? We're not going to pay attention to that because you may say Black Lives Matter, we say All Lives Matter. How about that? It's this bizarre sort of one-upness. And I think that it's done in almost a degree of deafness, I have to believe, blindness it perhaps is inadvertent. I think there are those who think, they've used this, so should we. Why not, right? It seems to have gained steam. Well, let's gain steam with a twist, a co-opting of it. And that's disingenuous. And it doesn't help change this dynamic. Does nothing to bring solidarity to this situation, or common good, or human dignity. So we got to realize that, you know, before we launch out into the co-opting something that belongs to another group, let's measure everything we do by those four. Let's do that. Is this dignified? Does it truly uphold the dignity of this community and our community? Passes that test, great. Move on to the next. Is there a common good that could be found here? Terrific. We check that one off. Is this truly dealing with subsidiarity that allows solutions on the most local of possible levels? If it does, terrific. And then, is this in total solidarity with all of humanity? Right? If you can do that, you've got a platform. If any of those fail, you've failed before you're out the door. Don't do it. And this is what I've said on my Facebook page. I'm saying if you're guilty of this, stop it. Just stop it. Don't use that stuff. Don't turn the things around. It has nothing to do with dignity. Certainly has nothing to do with common good. You might be able to find a way to justify subsidiarity in there somehow, but it's not solidarity. So stop. The other thing I said is stopping, that we need to stop is this romanticism. I can't look at this in any other way. This romantic notion that Donald Trump is pro-life and is going to solve all the problems in the abortion arena. That's not going to happen. It's a guy who's pledged his... Well, I'm not sure he's pledged to support, so don't hold me to that. He has certainly expressed his appreciation. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. He's expressed his appreciation for the number one abortion provider in the nation. He's done that publicly. He's made completely inane comments regarding pro-life issues. So don't think this guy really knows what he's talking about or has any clue. Then there's the other side, which we're going to talk about more at length in a moment, that now he's kind of teasing and which I think has been presented out there for some time, that maybe he really doesn't want the presidency. And this is a bizarre reality show for him, and he's essentially on The Apprentice now. Should he be elected, he wouldn't even accept the job. Now, this is getting floated around, and it seems to be substantiated from his own comments, and this is a guy we're throwing support behind because it's anything but Clinton, so we're going to do this? No. Stop it. Stop that. I've given you an opportunity. I've shown you a path to someone who can uphold your values. You don't have to buy into the garbage of the lesser of two evils, especially if one is not even serious about taking the job. We'll talk more about that in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Follow me on Facebook. You can follow Breadbox Media over there as well. You can also become a friend of the show if you value what you hear here at Breadbox Media. You can support any of the shows And you could do that by show individually. Could be mine. It could be someone else's. Very easy to do with a $10 monthly membership as a premium member. It's not a donation. We're not a 501c3. It's not a tax deduction. It's a membership that's going to get you premium content, discounts, deals, offers, all the kinds of things that will come your way as a friend of the show. So if you value what you hear, become that friend. You can do that. We would love to have your support there as well. Speaking of support, we were talking about this a moment ago, and it's just bizarre. You know, I said from the beginning with Trump, he reminded me of a rodeo clown. He reminded me of a deflection of attention. And it is almost weird, almost darn weird. And, you know, we've seen the photos of Trump and the Clintons arm in arm, yucking it up and celebrating together. And there's a history with these two. And as weird as it may sound, and now we've got Trump basically saying that he would not accept the job, hinting to that he would not accept the role as president should he win the election. Now, there has been nothing more bizarre in my experience as a voter, in my examination of political history in our country, than what I'm hearing right now. And as I said, I sensed this in the beginning, that there's something very bizarre about his candidacy anyway. So now I know that I'm throwing out a big conspiracy theory, but what if he really is sincere about his denial of the position, should he win, and basically forfeits this to Clinton, and that's been the plan all along, right? What if that's the case? And as I've said many times, he's a showman, he is a businessman, he is going to do anything he possibly can to manipulate the situation for his advantage, and with zero sincerity. And if this is a game to him, as apparently has been all of the things perhaps he's done, there's this kind of game involved, then why would we support him to begin with? You know, I've read a number of his books, interestingly enough, because I did find him as a fascinating individual with just, you know, an interesting amount of bravado to do certain things that most people would never do. And one of the things that comes to mind immediately as I think about this game, this interesting game of whatever seems to be happening here, was that in his early days of real estate, before he ever had any clout, right? He had one suit, tells the story, he had one suit and $5,000. And he carried that cash in his pocket because it made him feel like he had something. So he'd go out in his suit and his $5,000 and pretend to be a company that didn't exist until he was able to get enough support behind him to get off the ground. Now, I know entrepreneurs do all kinds of crazy things. I do know you have to promote yourself. You have to put a tremendous amount of steam behind anything that you're doing to get people on board, because you got to believe in it. And if you believe in it, others will tend to follow. This is part of the entrepreneurial spirit. But to simply put together a charade because this is the fake it till you make it kind of deal, you know, there's something about building slowly and digging deeply to begin. And yeah, it looks like a big hole in the beginning, but you know what? If you dig deep enough to find the bedrock, then to build upon that rock, now you have something with tremendous security and tremendous stability. If you do that and then build upon it, there's no faking, right? You've done the sweat equity. You've put the work in. You know the ins and outs of what you're doing. And there's something undoubtedly foundational that you can build upon with that. But if all you're doing is going out with your one suit and all the money you've got in the world in your pocket in order to make you feel important, and this is how you build what you've got, you kind of got to question that. And you got to see that this is an ethic. You know, ethics don't just, generally speaking, ethics don't just kind of materialize at some point in someone's career. They are either there or they're not. And it may be a degree of this and that, and you know, all of us are on a road of development every day. Where hopefully we're getting better, and hopefully we're learning more and growing more, and growing in sincerity and true dependability, and not something that is, you know, this crazy act that we seem to see in this show that's taking place. So as I said before, I've never trusted him any further than I could throw him, which I've never tried to throw anyone other than kids in a pool. So doubt I could throw him far. But the other crazy, and I said this on my Facebook page, I said, why does this smell like Dogs and Ponies to me? Basically a show that is unsubstantiated. And that's what's happening in the State Department now, after the Justice Department apparently seem to determine that Hillary Clinton is not guilty of criminal behavior. Well, is it because now there was such public demand and maybe an outcry from constituency that the State Department is now saying, okay, well, we'll get behind this and we'll investigate? Where is this going to go? Down the road of Dog and Ponies, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's anything that anyone can do at this point to derail the Clinton machine. That's not going to happen. I know there are conspiracy theories regarding the meeting between former President Clinton and Loretta Lynch. I know that that's been a concern. I know there's a lot of things in this dynamic that seems to be very bizarre and weird and questionable. But I will say this, I think it's no less questionable what we're seeing right now than anything we've seen in this entire dynamic, because this is, it's weird, to say the least, to see what our FBI director did. Now we see this interesting Gowdy response, and Trey Gowdy basically saying, well, what you did wasn't thorough enough, so we're going to get in there, and we're going to find the ways to do this right. I am so cynical, and I know that, and I don't necessarily value that about myself, but I can't see the sincerity here. And I can't see that this is something that is going to end in some sort of solutions that make sense. I think we get people who are above the law, and we get people who are, you know, it's the animal farm. All animals are equal. Some are more equal than others. We've seen that meme go around a zillion times now on Facebook. And I can't help but think that is what we're dealing with. This is where we are. It's such an unfortunate reality. And not that we haven't always had a degree of this. There's always been a privilege. There's always been those who have the opportunity to do things a certain way that others can't. And I just think we're seeing it played out in ways that we maybe haven't seen before, even though it's always been there. But unfortunately, it's hard to have confidence, right? It's hard to put confidence in this, which I think, praise God, that's why we are people of faith, because Scripture's clear. We don't put our faith in men and horses, right? We don't put our faith into things that look like the secular world or the political arena. This is not where our faith goes. Our faith is wasted in those areas. And I think that there are those who are convinced that there's some sort of savior-like quality from political leaders. That's crazy. Get that notion out of your head. Yeah, we vote. We vote with our conscience, our informed conscience. We vote as Catholics. We vote with sincere ethic. And when we do that, we've done our part, right? It's not the lesser of two evils. It's not anything but this guy therefore we've got to just block that individual from getting the position. No, that's not the ethic. Nothing in the Faithful Citizenship Guide talks anything about the lesser of two evils or compromising your principles in order to put someone else in office. I'm sorry. There are lots of Catholics. There are priests out there. There are others who have made statements of this nature, and it's simply not true. It's simply not true. That is not a part of our dynamic as a Catholic voter. So I simply ask for right now, my goodness, with what we're dealing with in this election, in this culture, the powder keg of challenges that are surrounding us, discern, right? Discern. Really take this to prayer. Sincerely begin putting all of this in God's hands and our response as well. And if in your prayer you somehow end up determining that Donald Trump is the solution, pray again. Pray again. Back with more in just a moment. Todd Warner's our guest. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. And I think one of the most cultured things that we do ever is talk with Todd Warner on a monthly basis. Todd, of A Catholic Thinker blog over at Patheos. Todd, welcome. How are you?
Leo, I'm doing great. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've never been a big poetry guy other than the stuff that I had to wade through in school, right?
Yep.
That's kind of my extent. I got, you know, unless you want to include, like, Van Halen song lyrics as poetry.
There's poetry there.
I think I'm going to start a blog and just use nothing but Van Halen song lyrics, and I'll pretend it's some lost poet that no one. You know, interestingly enough, and I'm not to change the subject, David Lee Roth was pretty darn well read. I mean, believe it or not.
No, it's funny because I think about Bob Dylan. I mean, and that's probably a gimme, but I look at these, and I remember the young guy listening to Dylan saying, "This guy, how can this guy be famous? He can't sing." And then I got older, I started listening to what he was singing, and I was like, my gosh, some of this stuff is just deep stuff. Wow. And I think people can obviously find depth to things that you and I would look at and kind of raise our eyebrows. But there's something, I don't know, maybe as I get older, I'm becoming an old, who knows, but the poetry speaks to me more now. And the poetry in some of the lyrics, some of these singers, they speak to me as well. So maybe it's a testimony to my aging.
That was where I was going with this because, you know, I think that certainly as I read this blog and the poets that you cite here and some of the poetry that you reference, it does speak to me in ways. Just in high school, what the heck, you don't have these longings or feelings maybe that are expressed in some of this poetry, but it's definitely there. What is the title of the blog? It's about this feeling of never being at home kind of thing.
Yeah, basically the title of the blog is why it's okay to feel ill at ease.
Okay.
Why it is okay to feel ill at ease.
Yeah, and so the idea behind this is that there's always kind of a longing, right? There's something, regardless of where we are, there's this longing for more. There should be. There definitely should be. It's kind of, it is innate. It should be even nurtured, I think, to have this desire for something more. And you reference Balak, you reference Frost in this as far as some examples of this kind of longing that's there that they've expressed as well.
You know, it's interesting. If people look at their daily lives, and I think it's something that happens you know, it happens at every age. I mean, I think it happened to a high schooler, it happened to a college student, it happened to a middle-aged or an elderly person. The long and the short of it is there's a certain restlessness we have in us. And when I went back and read my post again, I thought, gosh, I could have put St. Augustine in there, and that famous line where he says, our heart is restless until it rests in thee. And there's this God-shaped hole within each one of us. There's this longing for the serenity of heaven. And while we're here on this careworn earth, we slog through. We have moments of great joy. We have moments of tragedy. But sometimes there's just some sense that you know, we're just a little bit uncomfortable, just a little bit ill at ease in our everyday life, and again, that can happen in the midst of wonderful experiences. There's elements of poignancy. There's elements of something that just may be a little bit off, a little bit missing. And I think it's a very common human experience that often people don't articulate. And so frankly, people I think sometimes feel a little bit isolated if they feel a little bit ill at ease, and they can't put their finger quite on it. And yet, and by the way, I think a lot of people kind of go in search of the wrong things to fill that God-shaped hole. You know, as Aquinas would talk about, you know, the power, honor, pleasure, and wealth are these surrogates for God that are always ultimately empty. And so I guess the point is Chesterton and Belloc and C.S. Lewis, especially in naming this, and then what I would describe as a poem from Robert Frost I learned in fourth grade, and then the Lake Isle of Innisfree from Yeats that I just heard recently, speak to that place that we're all sort of longing for, the place we go to in daydreams, that even for a moment, it's a respite from the world, and it's a good place to go, but it's just a glimpse of the eternity that sort of waits for us all.
Mm-hmm. And the Frost poem about the snow in the woods, what is that called?
So this is called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening.
Okay.
It sounds like, you know, it's one of those mundane poems you kind of blast past in an anthology of Frost poems and so on. But for me, it was a significant one because here I was, had moved to small town Iowa. I was there for fourth grader, and my old school fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Duffy, basically said we all had to memorize this, and we'd all on a particular day take our turns standing by our desk in front of the whole class and reciting the doggone thing. And the interesting thing is I've never forgotten it. Now, the interesting thing, and I think a lot of people can sense this, when a fourth grader doesn't necessarily get this. I mean, a fourth grader is sort of just memorizing this poem. Mm-hmm. But there's something about getting some of these things in your marrow, and then you chew on it as you live life. And all of a sudden, when you're returning to it at 18 and 38 and 58 and on, and life experiences happen to you, you start to reflect on the meaning of that in a whole new light, which is one of the reasons, by the way, I would say all the classics that one will read in their young years, they should be reapproached 10 years, 20 years, 40 years down the road, because life has happened to you, and all of a sudden that book, that tale, that poem has different meaning. Mm-hmm. That now is fuller. What you might have disdained at one point as irrelevant may have life-expanding relevance to you 20 years later, 40 years later.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I was familiar with this poem from Frost, but I had never, my goodness, I don't know when the last time I heard it was. And so to kind of read it again with certainly in light of what you're talking about, this understanding that there's a longing for something more in just this kind of moment of dreaming about what might be beyond the woods there or in the woods, or, you know, this fascination with what is happening in this place that is not your home, and of course, the very famous miles to go before we sleep, right, is the end of this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep.
Right.
And miles to go before I sleep. Absolutely. The interesting thing about this is the whole poem, this four stanzas, are about a guy who just pauses when his horse-drawn carriage pauses in the woods and reflects. And even as it's snowing on him, it's the darkest evening of the year. He's no idea whose woods these are as they fill up with snow. The horse is like, let's get on with it, starting to shake his harness bells. And this guy's lost for just a minute in reflection. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, it's late. No one's out. And he's working hard, and he's tired, and he's got work to do, and he's got miles to go. but you need to take a moment to reflect. And to me, you know, as we've all lived these busy lives, it's one of those things that reminds me that, man, you know, as life goes on, as your kids age in front of your eyes, as this schedule calls upon you and that phone call and this obligation and this worry, we need to stop the carriage sometimes. Mm. We need to look at the woods around us. We need to reflect, or else we will become too obsessed with all the promises we have to keep, all the miles we have to go, and we'll miss what life is all about. And if I could say this quickly, Chesterton says this so very well about the notion of you know, the journey and the inns that you stop at on the journey. And he says, basically, there's a lot of people that when you go from one English inn to the other, you keep thinking that these inns are the place that you're heading to, and you kind of disdain the journey upon which that extends between one inn and the next. And he says, the inns point towards the road. The roads don't point towards the inn. We need to be present-minded during those journeys. And part of that comes back to the full circle to this blog, is that we need to walk with the permanent things. We need to walk with those daydreams. We need to walk with God every day, so we don't get lost in all the promises we have to keep, all the miles ahead of us, so we don't forget the journey that we're in the midst of or its significance, and we just think, well, I'll finally reflect on things at day's end when I'm finally at the place I'm at. No. Most of life is on the road, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of looking at it. Todd Warner with us this afternoon, a Catholic thinker, his blog over at Patheos, and talking about this recent blog about kind of realizing there's something within us that should be nurtured in this way, and definitely realize that these daydreams or these thoughts, these pauses, there's a lot that can happen there. You know, Todd, my family in Kentucky, we have family in Florida. We also have family in Arkansas, which we just took a trip down there, and we're big road trippers, right? We intentionally don't fly, not just because the hassle of flying and the expense, but we really enjoy the trip, right? We enjoy because we'll stop a lot. You know, we don't care if it takes us 2 days to get somewhere. You know, we'll stop and see friends along the way, or we'll stop and see attractions along the way. We'll stop and see churches along the way. I mean, there's a number of things that we've done on road trips that have just been so enriching because we took our time, right? We're willing to make the stops. We're willing to slow down and take the journey a little bit slower. And there's something I think that, unfortunately, we're so concerned about the destination and getting there just as quickly. Even if it's a vacation, we think we just want to get there as quickly as we possibly can. And, you know, I know that 17-hour car trips aren't ideal for most.
We've all seen Chevy Chase vacation.
Exactly. That's pretty much every vacation for us. But there's something beautiful about the journey, and I really think that it's great that you capture so much of that in this piece. And we're running out of time, Todd, but I value this. And the you know, this Innisfree Yeats poem that you wrap this up with, just a beautiful reflection as well of looking at these times where you can just really step back and reflect. We're out of time. We're going to read the blog, but Todd, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Cleo.
You're certainly welcome. Todd Warner, Catholic thinker, blog over at Patheos. Check it out there. That's all we have time for. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.